Hi, welcome to the Remember to Live podcast. I'm your host, Corinne Canty, a recovering corporate exec, coach, yogi, play advocate, mom, and all-around life enthusiast. I've walked the path of burnout and missed opportunities. But here's the thing, I found my way back to living. And I want to take you on that journey too. Tune in weekly for life design tips, authentic stories, and inspiring conversations with those who've chosen to live without regrets. Let's ditch the shoulds and have-tos and remember to live now. So get cozy, grab your favorite warm drink, and let's embrace our big, full, no-regrets lives together. In today's episode, we have an amazing guest, Candy Gungora. I've known Candy for many years. We spent a lot of those years working side by side, building better workplaces. She's a successful, phenomenal chief transformation and people officer with over 25 years of experience transforming teams and work cultures. She's an expert in employee experience, organizational development, and workplace well-being. She's also a proud mom, wife, cancer survivor, dog lover. She has five. And teaches kickboxing and human dog conditioning for fun. On paper, she has an amazing life, but it hasn't always been aligned to her well-being. Today, we're digging into the influences of shoulds in career choices and the detrimental effects of prioritizing work over personal health and relationships. We reflect on what it's like to be women breadwinners, unlearning societal conditioning, the destructive culture of hustle and grind, and recognizing the need for change. Candy shares insights on how she learned to overcome a conditioned mindset and habitual behaviors that were making her sick and keeping her from living the life she truly wanted. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast. So before we dive in today, since we all have very active and full lives, as you know, I don't like to use the word busy. I think words are powerful, though I hope you've had time to rest and recharge and do all the things during this holiday season. I'd like to take a moment for us to get present with each other and just take a breath. So let's take a deep inhale. Exhale, so we can be here together and nowhere else. All right, so I have my almond milk matcha and my cozy blanket. I'm so excited for our conversation today. What is your current favorite warm drink?
My current favorite warm drink is, there's two. It was peppermint mocha for the holidays, but now I'm kind of getting stuck on white Russian coffee. It doesn't have alcohol in it, so, but it tastes really yummy. And right now I have my peppermint mocha.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the Be the Change and Blessed. We're on yes. The same page with positive affirmations on our cups. Yes.
That's right. Love my butterflies.
Yes. So to kind of get us started, you know, you're one of my favorite people. And you've had a big impact on my life. I've talked many times about my corporate journey, and you were there for a big chunk of it. We worked side by side. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of work to create better workplaces. You were there when I got sick, telling me to stop working. You were there as I've transitioned into caregiver and this work that I'm doing now, being focused on this season. But over the years, we've had a lot of conversations about all the things we've had to unlearn. Many we've unlearned together.
Yes.
Though we have amazing careers on paper, a lot of our career was built off of the shoulds and the have-tos and the supposed-tos and all the things that society told us we needed to do, the boxes we needed to check to be happy and to be successful. And we know from personal experience and all of the people and the teams that we've led that lots of times that leads to people not living their own lives and many times even ending up sick. So I'd love it if you would share a little bit about your journey with the shoulds.
Yes. So I think my journey goes, like, even when I'm growing up as a young child, told you should go to college, you should do this, you should, all leading to a great career so that you don't have to worry about things financially. And that was my focus. So I did the shoulds. You should go to college. I did that. You should really just dive right into life with no breaks, no rest, no thought. I did those things, worked hard, did everything I was supposed to do. And, didn't think twice about it. Didn't think about what it was doing to me or how exhausted I was or not taking a moment, and dove right into the corporate world. And yeah. In fact, some of my choices, even at school, at university, was around what should I do versus what do I want to do? And I played with that a little bit because I switched majors quite a few times because I just couldn't find that perfect fit. And I was looking for one, that perfect fit, because I'm going to do this the rest of my life. And this is the path and what's going to be the best path for me. And oddly enough, I think I got to a really good path, but it was a lot of stress and worrying and changing and spending more time in school because of it. That I toyed with business, psychology, education. Those were my three loves, and I just couldn't find that perfect fit. So, I tried to make my own path there. And I think then it turned into working all the time, right? Yeah. You should be focused on your career. You need to build it. Being a woman, I felt like I had to work harder in different ways, or I was seeing certain ways that I at first leaned into, which did not serve my career well. And then I did things differently, but feeling like I had to work hard and work lots of hours and be present with work all the time, pretty much led to my own sickness and not putting myself first. And so also a should was around work and still be a mom and take care of the household, all of it. You can do all the things and you should do all the things. And I did all the things not well, right? I think work I did well. Not to say I was a bad parent, but looking back, I could have done things differently. And my boys both have a really good work ethic. Luckily, they have a different mindset around it, but I think they do get a little bit of where they are today because they saw my successes and they also saw things they wanted to do differently.
Yeah.
But that ultimately did lead me to my own health journey, which I was diagnosed with breast cancer at 43. And I fundamentally believe that my stress and the amount of work and not taking care of myself, both mentally and physically, led me down that path. The type of breast cancer I was diagnosed with is not tied to hormones. They really don't know what causes it other than stress is a component. Oh. Right. So I should have done better to take care of myself. And in fact, I started 5 years before I was diagnosed, I started putting myself first just a little, where I was working out and focused on my eating, taking time for myself, was in the best shape of my life when I was diagnosed. But it was a little bit too late.
Yeah. So you, like me, we became moms young. And so we were doing all the things and building these careers and trying to take on everything. And one of the things I realized looking back before I got sick was I had a lot of whispers before the roar. And as you're looking back on doing all the things and climbing the ladder and being successful and checking the boxes, do you remember hearing the whispers and kind of pushing them off to, I'll get to that later, or I'll take care of that later, or just after I get this title or get this project done or get whatever it is, keep putting ourselves last on the list until our body doesn't let us do anything?
I did hear the whispers. There were many signals, even from my sons, right? You know, things they were saying or thinking about. There were times where I knew I needed to eat better, just for example, right? There's like, I'll do that later. I don't have time. Or just thinking about it stressed me out more so that I continue to make bad choices. It almost like fed into itself. So I guess to self-soothe from the whispers, right? I was soothing myself versus truly taking care of myself. And there was also, obviously doctor visits or different, because I did get my physicals yearly, and there were definitely things around my weight or around my muscle mass I had lost or different things. But again, I didn't, in my mind, have the time. I felt like I was too busy. And like you just mentioned the word there, right? Mm-hmm. It really was just this hodgepodge of things that I felt like I should do, I had to do. And by the way, I had to do it.
Right.
Versus asking for help or even talking to my employer to say, hey, this is where I am. And this is kind of, I can do all the things. I can achieve the same results for you, but I'm going to look at it differently. Should have done that, but I didn't.
Yes. And so also in those early days of your career, I know you and your husband made a choice mm-hmm. for you to be the primary breadwinner as your yes. boys were young. And I don't know if we talk enough about women when they are the breadwinner of the home, whether like me being a single mom and I have to be, or choosing to be that because it's what works for your family. Mm-hmm. And then the added pressure we put on ourselves to still do it all and not ask for help and make everyone else comfortable so right. they can live the lives they want to live. And we'll get to ours later.
Yeah, it's a responsibility. It feels like a responsibility, or we've told that. I'm very fortunate that I have a husband who is truly a partner, mm-hmm. but he was told things, or he saw the world a certain way that was, you know, that everybody was seeing that he didn't know different. And so I think, you know, I remember one time we had a conversation, and this is before we made our choice, our life choice you're talking about, and I'll get to that. But I remember having a conversation where I realized I was doing a lot of things, and not that he didn't do things, he did, but I did it to myself, if I'm honest. Like, I had to have control of the bills. I needed to have control of the financials, the budget. I need to have control over when we did what and the scheduling. I mean, it wasn't like he was not doing it. I just was actively doing it. Yeah. And I remember one day I sat down because I was so tired and I wasn't, which was another signal, like, what am I doing? I'm not doing anything. All my work is knowledge work, right? Not manual labor. And I sat down and I wrote out all the things I'm responsible for in my mind that I've given to myself. And I wrote down what he's responsible for. And notice my list was like really long with my hand signals and his was really short. And I sat down and had a conversation with him, and he was blown away too. Like, he didn't realize all that I was doing. And then, you know, his question was like, why are you doing all of that? And so then we rebalanced our list a little bit. So that was a good conversation. But it was constantly getting out of sync. And again, not because of him, because of my choices and what I felt like I had to do or I need to do or be responsible for. I think there was some guilt from all the work I was doing. So then I would be the sports managers, the soccer managers for both my boys' teams, right? Mm-hmm. So because I felt guilty that I wasn't there all the time. Or we were switching clubs and they needed somebody to be on the board to help build the club. I'll do it, even though I have a full-time job, right? And so I felt like, I think guilt came from that too. But when my oldest son, who's now 30, was 12, one morning we were getting ready for school and he dropped in the floor with a full-blown seizure. And that changed our lives. And again, was a signal. But it changed our lives tremendously forever. But also for the next few years, we had to make some choices because we could not get his seizures under control. And it was keeping him out of school and having a life. And we sit down. And at that time, we had a great conversation. You know, my husband and I around, like, what are we doing? What are we doing with our lives? You know, this is a wake-up call for us. Our son needs us. We're not home. We take care of them in the mornings and get them where they need to go. But then we're off on our careers. We both worked an hour away. What are we doing here? Are we building a family and a life? Are we chasing something else that's really not here to serve us? So we had a great conversation and the choice was made that one of us needed to be here for him. I love my career. I love the company I was working for. I love the work I was doing. He was, you know, it was a job, right? And so he was willing to leave his career. We felt like it was the best choice for us overall. But even after that decision, things got out of whack for me again. You know, he was home. He took care of a lot of things that I no longer had to worry about. Getting the boys where they need to go, taking them to and from school. That was one less stress for me. And then he actually started his own career, his own business that worked around the boys' schedule and his life. Like, he literally executed it really well. He was, he did the
designing
thing that we all
life.
Should do.
Yeah, for yeah. him.
And we didn't and even see it.
As he started taking on some more of the things at home, freeing you up, what did you fill that extra time with?
More work. More work. Because then in my mind, it was like, great, I can get to work earlier. If I have to stay to at work later, that's awesome because I don't have to rush home to beat the daycare timing and different things like that. So he took the right path unconsciously, which is fascinating now when we look back at it. I, you know, help people develop and I coach people, but I didn't take care of myself. And I got right back to the same path. I just added more work and that just freed me up to do more work and be there more often or not have to worry about it. Travel wasn't a big deal. Like, it just freed me up for more stuff versus freeing me up for maybe time for myself or more time for my family. So again, I was chasing something and doing what I felt like I was supposed to do with the added pressure of being the sole breadwinner. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, my husband never put that on my shoulders. He instantly, within 6 months, was starting his own business. Within the year, he made up the income, if not and more, that we let go of. It worked out, right? Yeah. Without me controlling it, honestly. But I still didn't see that signal and I still continued down my path.
Yeah. And I think the key word that you're saying is the one thing that I think happens to a lot of us in our careers, especially in the Western culture, is the chasing mm-hmm. of the success mm-hmm. symbol, the chasing of all the things that we're told. This is the title you should have. This is the salary you should have. This is the house you should have. This is what success looks like. This is what happiness looks like. And so many times we spend decades chasing it. And then on paper, we get it. Mm-hmm. And we don't have the happiness that was promised and we don't feel good because our bodies are worn down. And we look back and there's all these moments we've missed with family and friends and children. And many times we feel stuck. And a lot of that has to do with kind of the mindset we've been conditioned to believe and the habits that we build around all of these conditioned ways of success that drive our behaviors for decades. What made you start to want to shift that and look a little bit more at the life you want to live versus the life you were supposed to live?
I've had bits and pieces of it happening my whole life just because I'm interested in development, in psychology, in behavior. That's just a natural interest of mine. So I've taken courses, I've been coached, I've done different things, taken assessments. I think the first big breakthrough, though, for me was in my last role, I went through an executive education course, and it was good. It was really good. But I had a coach, and they did this extensive assessment work, 360, all kinds of assessments. And there was some great feedback from people who I worked with that led the coach to think about, like, what's getting in the way here? What's getting in your way? And we drilled it down to the inner critic. I know a lot of us have an inner critic. I did additional work outside of that coaching because then I became fascinated with, like, what's this inner critic and what is it doing? And, you know, really it's sabotaging me in many ways. And so I did more work there and took it all the way back to the root. I love doing root cause analysis. And it was really tied to all the way back to when I was 6 days old and I was put up for adoption. And even though I had a wonderful family, wonderful childhood, I still never felt like I was enough. I knew from the very beginning I was adopted. My family was very open about it. They celebrated it. I know that they wanted me, right? So all the things, there's so many great things about it, but I wanted to prove my worth to them. I wanted to be worthy. I wanted to be good enough. I wanted them to get their ROI. As crazy as that sounds, right? I don't know. That's just, you know, I wanted to prove myself. And again, they did not create that environment for me. My brothers would tell you I'm probably more loved than they are. And they're the blood children. But it had nothing to do with that. It was how my mind processed it, how I looked at it. Once I realized that that was the driving factor, I really dove into that and questioned that more and realized that I had nothing to prove at all, because they accepted me fully. They wanted me. I probably had a leg up than a lot of people, where the families didn't expect the child and they just had to deal with it. I'm very thankful that my birth mother made that choice. And since then I've got to meet her, and that's helped me continue to heal. Mm-hmm. But that work I did, I realized it, but I didn't make a lot of change, sustainable changes. Mm-hmm. So that work started there. And then I think, and like I said, many signals, but when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, game changer for me, for sure. At 43, I was, like I said, in a good shape. My sons, my last one was graduating. He graduated a month before I was diagnosed. I was looking at a different season of life.
Yeah.
And so I was even thinking like, oh, well, maybe now I can back off work a little bit. We can travel some. The boy, you know, just thinking through what could be next. And that really stopped everything. And, you know, I worked the whole time during treatment. I saw that as a badge of honor, which is terrible.
Let's pause on that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
This idea in our society that, like, sleep when I die, hustle, grind,
yes,
badge of honor,
yes,
culture,
yeah,
is actually killing us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's actually the cause of the exact opposite of what we want to achieve. We work so hard because we want to have this amazing life, yet it destroys us from physically even being able to have a quality of life. And it's interesting, as you're in the middle of fighting for your life, mm-hmm, and trying to heal your body and learning that you have this form of cancer that you can't blame on your hormones, or you can't blame on some of the things that we tend to look for when we get sick, of like the, why am I get sick? What could I have done different?
Right.
And knowing that stress is a big cause of that, yet still, mm-hmm, it was like, but I can work through it. And I did it. And mm-hmm, like, we're proud of that.
Very, very proud of it. And celebrated, even like by your friends, by your family. Not so much. My husband did not agree with that, my method, but it's another story. He's more evolved than I thought he was all along. But I think, but you know, even my bosses, I took, you know, the day I had the infusion, I mean, this is how bad it was, Corrine. I scheduled my chemo around what would be less disruptive for work. And I do want to say this, like, there is a balance of not being in bed feeling sorry for yourself and being active while you're going through treatment. And that's so needed. And that's what keeps you well, I believe, and keeps you motivated and keeps your mind good, in a good place. But there's also that extreme of, okay, I'm going to schedule my chemo on this day because this day, the next day I'm not sick, and that's Friday, and I can be at work. And then the next 2 days are the worst, which are the weekends. Mm-hmm. So I'll just go through the worst on the weekends. And then Monday I'm back at work again. I save the best for hot work.
Yeah. It's like, we don't realize that there's so many other slices of life than just work. We're conditioned that, like, mm-hmm, that's the main thing. And how many times have we talked, mm-hmm, about the work-life balance fallacy? There's no such thing as work-life balance, because that means work and life are separate. Right. And mm-hmm, they're not. There's only life. Work is one slice of, mm-hmm, it. But we're so conditioned that work is the thing. And we do, as adults, spend most of our life at work. We do meet a lot of people at work, and that's, but mm-hmm, a lot of that is conditioned in us. And even when we need to take time to heal, and when we need to do things for our body, even when I was sick, I was trying to, you know, you're telling me, what are you doing? I'm laptop on the bed.
On the bed.
Can't get up and walk, but I'm going to just listen into the call instead. I could have been doing a million other things to keep myself busy, to keep, mm-hmm, myself active, to work, mm-hmm, on my healing. Mm-hmm. But there's this feeling that we get of needing to show up for everyone else, even, mm-hmm, when we need other people to show up for us the most.
And we won't ask for it.
Right.
Either. Right? Right. But that's the thing. It's where, and think about this, the number one thing to help you heal is sleep and rest. Mm-hmm. But I was you know, not doing that, I was going back to work. And let me be clear, my last employers were amazing. Mm-hmm. Through my treatment, through my whole career, I was there for 16 plus years. This was me. This was my choices. Now, it was so easy to sit back and blame whoever for expecting me to work or getting used to the output that I was giving them. But that it was all on me. And so even in this scenario, it was on me. They didn't ask me to work. They didn't want me to work, right? There were times where I was sitting at my desk working in between treatments, and one of the presidents would come in and give me money and say, go to the spa today, you know, or go here today, or go home, or do this. Like, they were constantly trying to give me opportunities. They were sending meals during holidays. Like, they wanted me to rest, but I made the choice, right, to be there.
And amazingly, right? you mm-hmm. beat cancer.
Right.
And we're very glad for that, despite all the work despite that you did all that. During your challenge.
Right. Yes.
And I'm curious, is once you got through that initial battle, because I know it's a lifelong thing, mm-hmm. did things change?
For a short period of time. And again, as I reflect on this, some of the change was driven by, once again, my partner, because he then would wake up, fix my drink, my coffee, you know, make sure my office was set up. Like, he did things to support me as I was going to work because he had more flexibility. He would go with me on errands. Like, he just tried to take out stress the best he could. And so that drove some of the changes that we made. We were together. We didn't stress over things. We tried to make chores more fun and adventuresome. So, but during one of my sick times after chemo, I was obviously not feeling well, and I was surrounded by my dogs. You know, I love my dogs. And so I had my puppies with me. My husband was with me, and we're in my bedroom. It was dark, and it just felt so good. Like, even though I was sick and I didn't feel great, it felt good. That moment felt good, being in my house with him and the dogs. And I just made the statement of, like, I really wish I could be home more. I don't want to go back to work. But I was very clear. I was like, I want to work. I love work. Mm-hmm. I love doing what I do. I love my practice. But I didn't want to physically have to go somewhere and leave. Because in my mind, because I wasn't making the choices, when I'm gone, I stay gone a long time and I have very little time at home. Mm-hmm. But I put that out in the universe. Just one statement. And honestly, I never thought about it again. I actually forgot about it because as soon as I got back, I was happy to kind of get kind of back to normal. And I got back into the swing of things. Like I said, he helped me somewhat. I wasn't working as long because for a long time, you're tired even after you're done with treatment. So it took a while for my body to bounce back. But just a few weeks after my treatment ended, I got a reach out from where I'm working now. Somebody I had worked with before is the CEO of the company I'm at now. And he reached out and offered a role, or for me to apply for this role. And they have been remote for a long time. And so I would be working from home. And I actually looked at that as stressful, thinking, oh my gosh, now I have to make this decision. I just got done with this big thing in my life. And my husband was like, why are you stressing? This is literally what you asked for. Mm-hmm. You put it in the universe that this is what you want. And this will allow you to be at home with your dogs, with me, and not have to be in traffic and some of the other things that you don't want to deal with that add stressors to your life. And so to make it, like, to just bring it back around, I did switch careers. And for a short period of time, once again, I was really leaning into being at home. And then I got right back to my bad habits, where now it turned into, well, I'm at home, so I don't have to do the commute hours, so I can work extra, or let me just run back into the office really quick and answer this email, and then I'm gone for an hour or two. Or, you know, all those bad things came creeping back in again within a few years.
Yeah, it's when we don't do the work. Because we have a lot of these ahas, right? We have these moments, like in that one moment you had where you were fully present, your aha came, like the clarity mm-hmm. came of like what mm-hmm. you wanted. But then we jump back in the hamster wheel. And when we don't do the work, mm-hmm. even when we get the nudges and the whispers, even when we get the roars, and we don't intentionally mm-hmm. design our lives and give ourselves permission to live the lives that we want to live, we've been doing these things for decades. We have these habits and we just recreate what we know. We can get in several mm-hmm. different new environments. And I remember even like the first week when I left corporate and I literally had nothing. I had no emails. I had no IMs. Mm-hmm. I had nothing that I quote unquote had to do.
Right.
I had to fill it with something to make me feel the pressure. I was creating all this like busy work and things and deadlines. And I had to pause and be like, wait a minute. Nobody's making me do this. I'm right. the boss. I don't have to answer to anybody. Mm-hmm. But my body was so conditioned to having to feel that pressure all the time. And I felt like I was lazy or I wasn't doing something like that whole right. grind, hustle, work all the time mentality was so mm-hmm. ingrained. Even when I knew and made the conscious choice to step away, my body still wanted it. My body still wanted right. it. And so as you even created a new environment for yourself and got in kind of shifted into that next phase, mm-hmm. same thing happened. We start recreating same what we happened. Know. And so what helped you get past that?
Well, once again, I started not feeling great and I've had things pop up again. And I, again, like to look for the root cause, like to dive in. I don't just accept it or just take medicine or just go to the doctor. Like I do those things, but I also try to figure out like what's really going on, what's happening here, and start with myself. Cause again, I'm making the choices no matter what happens. Like I'm physically making these choices physically and mentally. And I realize that I'm not taking care of myself again, mm-hmm. and I'm not putting myself first, even though now I literally have no reason. My partner, my husband, he does his fair share, if not more. I have great doctors. All the things like but it doesn't matter. It all comes back to me. So as I was getting sick more, I started questioning and then I, questioning what's going on. But then I started hitting mental blocks. So my memory, after chemo, my memory did change, but I could see it changing more. So I'm tired, have too much on my plate. I can't think. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was happening. I was having digestive issues, just a lot of things that were not going to serve me. And it scared me because if I'm not healthy, that's the one thing that I can control to keep the cancer away is being healthy, eating healthy, moving my body, keeping weight off, resting. Resting's a big one. And I wasn't doing any of those things. And so I realized I'm the few things I do have control over, I'm not managing. And so therefore I have no control over anything at the moment. And it became mm-hmm. scary. And it was hitting me on all areas where, yes, I was doing the work and still coming to work and still, having a good relationship with my family, but mentally I was drained and I was catching myself getting more emotional. I've always cried when I'm angry, like tears will come out, which makes me more angry, but these were different. And it wasn't like boohoo. It was just like this. I was sad internally. I don't know how to explain it.
Your body needed a release.
I needed a release. Yes. And I could feel it because on the outside I'm fine, but inside my body's sad, like to your point, and needed to get out. And so having conversations with you or people who understand, I was able to kind of articulate that and get it out there and then just almost like examine it, like put it out there. Mm-hmm. Like when talking with you, we put it out there and we kind of look at it. What is it? What's going on? What's happening? And I think that really hit me that I'm just repeating again, it's a trend and I'm the problem. And I'm aware of all these things. I study these things. I coach other people. I, dive into the work that you do to learn more, around yeah. things. And so it's not that I'm not educated. I yeah. am, but I do have that tendency to put others first. In other words, I will jump up an opportunity to coach somebody or even personal train. Like I do kickboxing and I do conditioning work. I, work out with your dog. I have a lot of side hustles. And I love doing that work and helping other people. I just never turn the mirror around yeah. to realize that I need to do it first for myself to take care of them. Yeah. And this time, once I saw the trend and realized that I asked for the environment I'm in right now. Nobody here at my current role is driving me to work tons of hours. In fact, they want, you know, we prefer to be more efficient and effective and do what you need to do. Nobody's counting your hours or seeing when you're online or anything. And so it's back to me. And so I've had conversations with my boss. We just talked about a sabbatical, you know, and he was like, just go. You were telling me the same thing, but it's those mental blocks that just stop you and make you pause. I think that's where now that I'm very conscious and very aware of it, I don't have to wait for the roar or the little signals. I catch almost like a pause in my thinking. Mm. And then I'm trying to like change directions then and really question, is this serving me? Because if it's not serving me, it's not going to serve my corporate job either.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm sick, I'm not doing the best work for them or our clients, so or our people. So it starts with me. And so now I'm catching myself. I'm being more intentional. I'm also looking at it. I'm very, very framework process, like got to have an action plan type person. So now that I see it and I know the work's within myself, I've been doing other work around that. So like learning about Saboteur and Sage. Like I know you and I talked about that. We did that study together. That's helped me see like, oh, where does it come from? And I need to call it out, acknowledge it, and then take some little practices throughout the day to help me get like recentered. But also, what can I do in my flow of work, whether it's my side hustles or my main job at the corporate world? What can I do to make sure that I'm leading my life and the company's not leading me? Because let's be real, the company's not trying to lead me or ruin my life or any of those things. Like it's actually should be there to provide a benefit to my life.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
An outlet for my work. Friendships, like our friendship.
Yes.
Doing great work to celebrate. Seeing people thrive and have huge success. Seeing our clients do well. Those are all amazing things that should serve us well. But it's turned into something else.
It has. We've talked a lot over the years about how if you're working for a company, it needs to be a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yes.
And we've worked hard at building organizations to be that. And we have been advocates of people first programs and well-being programs. And our door is always open for everyone and everyone else.
Yes.
And like you said, we know, we've studied, we have the modalities, we have the certifications, we have the tools, we have the practices.
Yes.
Yet it's so hard to do it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's why we all need mirrors, because we can't see our own face. We can know it.
Right.
But we can't see our own face. And sometimes we need reminders and tribes and support systems to help us remember that you can't pour from an empty cup.
You can't. And I think that was part of it too. So one practice I have is we do talk weekly, right? And so I can share like, this is what I'm thinking, or this is what I'm struggling with. And sometimes you say nothing, but to validate me, but just to be able to say it out loud in a place where it's accepted and not seen as lazy or you need to stay busy or all the things that society thinks we should do. Like look, people who look at things differently. And so that keeps me on my path. But, you know, now I really start with me and start with myself. And so one example is I look at my schedule a few weeks ahead and I schedule in my time, meaning I need to eat lunch and I need to be mindful while I'm eating.
The basics.
Right. The basics.
Give myself the basics.
I need the basics. And what's crazy is that you hear people all the time, like, or you see them on calls. Once again, there is nobody at this company I'm at forcing you not to take a lunch or eat at your desk or whatever. I mean, our CEO, he's so smart. He leaves his house every day and goes by himself, and that's his time. Mm-hmm. It's his where he can take time for himself and just recenter and have a good meal and be mindful. And it's his time. It's blocked off. It's like they're not expecting us to do something different, but we have to create our own. We have to make sure one is the environment conducive to what we need, but then also we have to structure it. So I make sure I have time for lunch. I make sure that I have a time, like I can move my body.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like. And make sure that I walk outside every once in a while. Go get the mail. Don't schedule back to back. Just block off some time. And then block in, and then the work can fill in around that. And I have found my fear was by doing that, I would not have time to get the work done. And what I have found is that actually have more time because I'm more effective. My brain's better. And so when I do have my time to do work, I'm fully present and prepared to do the work versus trying to eat versus worrying about, like, I haven't got out of this chair in 6 hours. And so I've tried to put practices in place where I can't go back and break the habits that my body and mind are used to. Cause there's still that little saboteur on my shoulder that when I do, like, take a day off and do nothing, that's sitting there going, you're being lazy. You're being lazy. You're not being productive. I've just don't listen anymore as much.
It's time to learning how to reframe that into getting the rest that will fuel everything that I need to do. And I think one of the points that you made throughout this conversation is how much choice we actually have. And so in, you know, leading teams and leading leaders and coaching a lot of people, the one thing I hear a lot of is, well, one day when I get this title, then I can make more time, or I can't leave corporate because I need benefits. And the only way I can live the life I want is if I quit and I become an entrepreneur, and that's the only way. And we have all these other boxes and these ideas of these are the only ways to live the life we want. But I'm hearing you say that it's actually, no, it's realizing that we get to choose and create the environments that we're in, and understanding first yourself and learning how to listen to your body and what you need, and then learning how to actually ask for it and create space for it. And I know that you do a lot of this for other people at work in how you're leading. So what would you say to someone who's feeling the exhaustion, they're feeling the whispers, they may be feeling the roars, they're thinking, oh, I'm going to have to find another job, or I'm going to have to do something else, or, you know, they're feeling it in the relationship or whatever it may be. What would you say to them to help them start to find a way to shift and pivot and start to show up to the life that actually serves them instead of just the life that serves everyone else?
Well, I think you said it is starting with themselves, like really understanding what you want, like truly design. You have the ability to design your life. There may be some barriers and maybe trade-offs, but ultimately it's your choices that you make. So I would start with yourself and really understand what are you trying to drive for? And maybe it's a big dream, a big vision, like eventually you do want to leave corporate and you want to start this thing and become famous. Well, what's the first steps to get there? You know, so it's not overwhelming. But I think just trying to write down what that looks like. And for you to have that, what are some non-negotiables for you? And then look at where you're currently at. Because I do think that there's some really good organizations out there. There's some that are not, and I get that. But there are some really good organizations out there that have the environment that you can work with and within. But you have to be clear on what you're looking for and what you're wanting. And so once you do that, then I would really question, like, where you're currently at. Is that reasonable? Can that happen? What do you have control over that you can make happen? No, for example, nobody tells me what I have to do at what hour, or when I can go to lunch, or when I can't go to lunch, or how to schedule my day. I have full control over that. As long as I get the work done, I have full control. So I need to do that, right? So question and figure out, like, where do I have control and what can I do? And then the areas that are conflicts, have a conversation. You know, maybe you need to work certain hours on a certain day because of family or something, like have the conversation. So many times I think we assume it's not possible. And maybe it isn't, but if they tell you, then you know, and then you have another choice to make.
Yes.
And being really clear when you are looking for a role, it's not, I think myself included, it was about title, money, and the work I was going to do. And don't get me wrong, I need money to live on, right? I do want to be able to afford bills and different things. And I do want to have success in my career, however that looks, whether it's gaining skills, certification, titles, whatever that is. I do want those things, but not at the cost of other things, my relationships, health, all those other things. So I don't think that we focus on our resume when we're looking for work. Do we really focus on designing, like, what's our life design like? And then how do we make sure that we're using that wonderfully put together resume to apply to the organizations that could probably get you closer to that life.
Yes, I love that. When I'm working with clients on life design, one of the main things that we do is we focus on understanding what's our ideal day, not what's our ideal job, not what's our ideal title. What's our ideal day from the time that you wake up in the morning until the time you close your eyes? What would really bring you the most joy, make you feel the most alive, give you all of the things that you really want to experience in this one big, beautiful life that we're living right now?
Right.
And once you get really clear on that, because the one thing I found is that sometimes that's really hard for people to answer because they answer with all the things that they should want. All the things that society told them they should want. And so we have to really do the work till they can really get back to like, but what do I want? What really fills my cup? What did I give up in exchange for checking these boxes? And then once they get clear on that, then you have the tools to not only negotiate for, you know, getting paid what you're worth, doing the type of work that aligns with those things, but also how to negotiate for more joy and happiness, how to negotiate for the flexibility to be able to do the things to take care of yourself on a regular basis so that you can provide the most value, not only to yourself, but to the organizations. Because if we're constantly stressed out and in fight or flight, all those good parts of our brain are shut off. And so they're not getting much from us anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that a lot of have to learn and change their culture around and put well-being at the top of the list, because we all benefit from that.
Absolutely. Have you ever thought about, there's trade-offs, of course, but you know, as you're sitting here talking, I'm thinking through, I bet there's people out there, I've been there myself in the past, where you actually feel like you deserve more money, more pay, because of what you have to put up with or because of what the environment's like, right? Or you want the title. Well, if I'm going to have to if I'm going to have to do this and work all these hours, then I need the title or I need more money. Or, and it's interesting because that's not good trade-offs. If you think about it, like everybody wants to be paid fair, but fair is around market. If you think from an HR standpoint, like a market range, what's in the market and then what value do you bring? How does that fit in? Not, I hate it here. I don't have a life, and so I deserve more money. But yeah, I never thought about that way.
Doesn't do anything for you if all you're doing is working and you're not experiencing life.
Right, right, exactly. And so I think that's a key part of it. And then I think the other thing is when you talk about designing your life, what understanding who we are. You know, I share that I was adopted, which drove a lot of things, and I didn't think about that for a long time. But there's things in our background that we either haven't worked through, thought about, or understand how it contributes to our where we are at and how we show up. But I think I'll never forget, and this was an indicator for me too. I told you about my coach at SMU. An exercise, the very first, very elementary exercise. I know this now, but you know, gives me a sheet of paper and says, "List all your role. Like, who are you?" And so it's just a blank sheet of paper. It says, "I am blank. I am blank. I am blank." And there's no really instructions other than just share with me who you are.
Yeah.
And I went to, I am a director at the time. I was a director. I am a director. I am a soccer manager of two soccer teams. I am a mom. I am a wife. I am a whatever. And that all of it would look like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when I took it to her, she was like, "This is not who you are. These are things you do."
Yes.
You know, or roles you play. I'm like, "No, that's pretty much who I am." And she's like, "No, it's not." Yes. And that, I think about it from that standpoint too, like, who are you and what, you know, what do you bring to the table? And I think that also goes into your life design, because none of those things mattered. I mean, they did, but not really. They're not defining who I am. But if I looked at it that way, that just drove in the perfectionism, working all the time, having to be the best at all the things, right? They actually drove in that mindset. And so I think that's a key part too, is when you sit down and figure out what you want, like, who are you? And that kind of leads into as well, like, what do you want to achieve with this life? And how do you use those things that are so beneficial because you provide them because it's who you are?
Yeah. There's only one you. And I love that. I love that so much, because when people come to me and they say, I need to figure out my purpose. I don't know what I want to do. And it's always right. like, what do I do? I don't have a passion. I don't know what to do. And your purpose isn't what you do. Your purpose is who you be.
Right.
And when you're right. fully being who you are, then by default, mm-hmm. the things that you do will be fulfilling your purpose on yes. this planet. And so I love, love, love that. Thank you for sharing all of these little nuggets of your journey. I do have some rapid fire questions that I love to ask, and they're okay. kind of fun.
All right.
And I think it's okay. the perfect way to wrap up this episode. And so,
all right, I'm
first
ready.
First one is, what's currently your favorite part of the day?
So, as you know, we've recently acquired a lake house, and we're probably going to move out there as we're downsizing. But we have this new couch, and the house is just small and cozy, and it really can vary the time of day, but it's more or less when I have all of my need to do's done, whether it's the chores that my husband and I agreed to do on a Saturday morning before we go play, or it's my corporate job, or maybe even just reading a book for myself, whatever it is, when that's done, just grabbing a warm, cozy drink yes. and sitting on my new couch, which is so cozy and it has enough room for all the dogs, and just being still for a moment. That's like my favorite time of the day. And sometimes it happens in the morning, sometimes it happens in the evening, but I look forward to it. And it's really, and think about it. I'm not being lazy.
No,
right? I don't even think about it that way though, but I'm being cozy. I'm like, I'm feeling yes. all the feels. I'm being with the people, you know, my husband joins too. Like, we decide what we're going to do next, but it's like, I'm surrounded by the things that are important with really no agenda. But just being for a moment, it's
being present.
It's amazing feeling
in the moment, which I think is mm-hmm. beautiful.
Yes.
So you kind of answered the next question, but I'll ask it anyway mm-hmm. in case you want to clarify. But I'm thinking it's the couch. And yes. what's your current cozy?
That's my current cozy. I got a Lovesac sectional, and it is so cozy. And
we're not getting paid
seats.
To say that.
We're not getting paid to say that, but man, but I love it. But yeah, I think that's my cozy right now, where I just want to, I could just curl up with a good blanket, and I have lots of good blankets, and just yes. sit there
and
for
lots
a long
of cute
time.
Little dogs to keep you warm. What is your...
Yes, and keep me company.
Yes. What is your go-to feel-good song?
Well, I have so many. As you know, I love music. I think right now, and it's kind of tied to my cozy. Right now, I'm celebrating or something fun's happening, I have Love Shack. See, I almost said Love Shack that plays. And my husband teases me now because he sings Love Sack instead, since we're loving the couch so much. But that one, it just, I don't know, it just kind of, it's old school, but it's right now that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It
is fun. I just want to dance.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to play and dance and sing like nobody's listening and don't care if they are. Right? Yes. That brings me joy.
I think we should all have dance breaks. I've actually been doing like dance breaks before I wind down in the evening recently Ooh. Because I realized I hadn't been listening to enough music. So I weave it back in that way.
I love that. I'll tell you something. So one, when I celebrate something at work, a lot of times I'll do a single dance party, record it, and send it to my employees if they think it's funny. Right? When
I love that.
Yeah.
We need more dance and play.
We need more dance party. We do. But the video that when I saw you last and we're in the car and your other friends took video, from time to time, I will pull that up just because one, the music's fun, but two, seeing all of us dance and be so happy and carefree, it brings me joy. So,
yes, yeah. yes. And mm-hmm. and for the listeners, after after my TED Talk, Candy mm-hmm. is such a great friend. She flew yeah. to come see it in person.
Yes.
Me and her and a few of my other really good friends had a dance party in the car listening to like 90s dance music. And it was
yes.
the best time.
It was the best.
The cars so around us probably thought, I don't know what they thought, but it was the best time.
Who knows?
And that's all that matters.
We were present. We didn't even look at the other cars.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Yeah.
What is one thing that you currently do for your 80-year-old self?
Move my body. Mm. I'm thankful for my body. I'm thankful, right? I'm thankful for my health right now. So I move my body. Even if it's cold, I'll walk or I'll find something to do, but I move my body.
Very important.
Mm-hmm.
And the last question is, how do you remember to live?
When I wake up in the morning and I wake up and I'm feeling good, I'm breathing, I'm getting up, that's when I remember when I literally my feet hit the ground, because I know what it's like to not feel good and have pain and wonder if you're even going to live. And so I've made that a practice of when my feet touch the ground, I tell myself that I have to make this day worth it. Not doing too much. Mm-hmm. Just enjoy it.
Yeah. Just show up to it.
Just show up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, this has been such a great conversation. You know, I could talk to you every day, all day, any day.
Oh, same.
I am so grateful that you joined me. And for all the people out there, I'd love for you to share where they could find you, connect with you, and tap into your expertise.
Sure. Two places are probably the best. One would be LinkedIn, of course. Candy Angora, it's my LinkedIn. And then, I do Instagram somewhat. You'll see a lot of dogs, but I do some things on there from time to time, but that's K Gangora is my Instagram handle, but happy to connect with anyone. I love to continue the conversation with people who are on their journey or been on the journey a long time. They can share their practices, but love it when people reach out.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. It's been so much fun to be here with you today.
Thank you so much for listening to the Remember to Live podcast. I hope you learned some things, laughed a little, and above all else, were inspired to live more fully. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and share with a few friends so we can all help each other remember to live.